The Front Page Podcast, named one of iTunes' best in 2010.
On Friday's Front Page, the protests spread from Tunisia to Egypt and now to Yemen. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says the Israelis and Palestinians were close to a peace deal in 2008. He says Mahmoud Abbas's hesitation, his own legal troubles, and the war in Gaza scotched a potential deal. And the Illinois Supreme Court put former White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel back on the ballot in Chicago. I'm James Barron. All the news that's fit to podcast begins right now. Our top story says the wave of protests is spread across the Arab world from Tunisia to Egypt and now Yemen, a key ally in the war on terror and home to a branch of al-Qaeda. Times correspondent Anthony Shadid filed this report.
The core of those protesters gathered in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen. Many of them were demanding the actual fall of President Ali Abdullah Saleh. Now he's been in power for more than three decades. Others were calling for reforms of his government ahead of elections in April and ahead of another presidential ballot that's going to happen in 2013. Yemen is a fractured country. There's a secessionist movement in the south of the country. There's a rebellion in the north. The country itself has become a haven for militants from al-Qaeda. And there is a concern, I think, on part of some of these opposition activists that if protests go too far, if change happens too fast, and there's a risk of things falling apart in a country that's never really held together all that well.
Times reporter Anthony Shadid. In Egypt, opposition figures said they'd join protests planned for Friday. Nobel laureate Mohamed El-Baradei returned home in hopes of galvanizing the campaign. Egypt's largest opposition movement, the Muslim Brotherhood, also said it would take part on Friday. Times reporter Michael Slackman says the protests are another sign the established order in the Arab world is changing.
There are similar demands that cut across the Arab world. All of these people are ruled by authoritarian governments. They're suffering from poverty, widespread illiteracy, and more than that, lack of hope, ambition, and avenues for achieving change other than protest. Each of these countries is structurally quite different. Yemen is an impoverished country that has a very weak central government, even down to the limited ability to send out police and fire services, military services and infrastructure. Egypt is obviously a large country with a long history, strong institutions around the president. And Tunisia is a country that had a very broad middle class. Each of these countries have distinct differences. So I think the calculations for the success or failure or long-term sustainability of these protests will be different from country to country.
Times reporter Michael Slackman. Times reporter Robert Worth says one thread tying the protests together has been the satellite channel Al Jazeera. Its aggressive coverage has propelled emotions from one capital to the next. In many ways, this is Al Jazeera's moment. It's widely credited with helping start the revolt in Tunisia. Friday's page one looks at the delicate U.S. diplomacy toward Egypt. Cables made available by WikiLeaks show that publicly the State Department has been voicing strong support for President Hosni Mubarak. Privately, U.S. diplomats have been pressing him to make reforms. The cables show U.S. diplomats in Cairo raised concerns about torture as well as jailed dissidents and bloggers. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says he and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas were close to a peace deal 2 years ago. Olmert says in a new memoir that Abbas hesitated. Olmert also says the Israeli war in Gaza brought an end to the talks, and not long after that, Israel installed a right-wing government. Olmert's negotiations with Abbas have been the focus of Arab anger this week after Palestinian documents were leaked to Al Jazeera. The leaks may well make it harder for the Palestinians to offer concessions down the road. The Illinois Supreme Court put Rahm Emanuel back on the ballot for mayor in Chicago. The former White House chief of staff was thrown off when an appellate court said he didn't meet residency requirements. The Illinois Supreme Court overturned that ruling, saying it had no foundation in state law. Emanuel never stopped campaigning as the controversy worked its way through the courts. Minutes after his name went back on the ballot, he was at a transit station shaking hands with potential voters. Japan's economy is clogged with aging vested interests. That's a frustrating reality for younger people who could develop new products and industries. and that, in turn, has contributed to weak growth and rising pension obligations. Those are among the reasons why, on Thursday, Standard & Poor's downgraded the rating on Japan's sovereign debt. Inside Friday's Times, the most outspoken gay rights advocate in Uganda was beaten to death with a hammer. Homophobia is so strong in Uganda that Parliament is considering a bill to execute gay people there. Activist David Kato's friends say he had received death threats. Police officials say he was killed during a robbery. Other gay rights activists suspect that wasn't the reason. President Obama is getting a new spokesman. Jay Carney will be the new White House press secretary. He's a former Washington bureau chief for Time magazine. He's been the spokesman for Vice President Joseph Biden since 2008. Also in Washington, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack approved unrestricted planting of genetically modified alfalfa. Friday's Business Day section says he pulled back from a proposal that would have limited it to protect organic farmers. Vilsack says the Agriculture Department will take steps to make sure that pure, non-engineered alfalfa seeds remain available. And a mystery solved. A 16-year-old high school student came forward to explain how a grand piano wound up on a sandbar in the bay off Miami. Nick Harrington says he just wanted to make a video to impress college admissions officers at Manhattan's Cooper Union. He hopes to study art or music there. First, he has to get rid of the piano. The authorities say it's litter, not to mention an eyesore. He could face a $5,000 fine and possible felony charges. That's our preview of Friday's Times. For a look at all of these stories, go to nytimes.com. You can send your comments about the Front Page Podcast to podcasts@nytimes.com. That's podcasts with an S on the end at nytimes.com. From our newsroom in New York, I'm James Barron. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us.